Well, welcome everybody. My name is Emily Enloe-Hood. I'm the communications manager here at WebJunction, and I'm going to be your host today. I'm joined by Yvonne Ricker, who works in our Tech Atlas program. She's going to be our producer. She's going to work with me to make sure that everybody can hear us and can see the slides, so any troubleshooting issues that they may have. On the participant list, you'll see our names as WJ Emily I and WJ Yvonne. Right now, I'm going to walk very quickly through a few of the tools that you can use during the session. For those of you who aren't able to hear us, we will be sending probably a private chat to you to make sure that you can hear the audio portion of the webinar. And conversely, if you're having any trouble during the session, please feel free to send a private chat to either Yvonne or myself, that's Emily I. In order to make sure that background noise doesn't disrupt the presentation, I will be turning on what we call lecture mode, which means that you won't be able to speak your questions or comments while the presenter is talking, but the chat function will be enabled during the presentation, so you will be able to type your questions or comments there. The chat box is located at the bottom of your screen. You can send a chat to the main room, which everyone will see by selecting the main room from the drop-down menu to the left of the chat box. If you don't want to look at the chat or if you find it distracting, you can hide the chat box by dragging the top bar above the chat box down, and this will hide for you only that area. During today's webinar, you might also be asked to answer some questions. You'll see several buttons at the bottom right of your screen. The check mark means yes, and the no, or the X mark, means no. You've already started to play with that a little bit. If you want to share with the presenters or with the other participants what you're feeling, we do have these what we call emoticons, and you can select those by selecting the that drop-down menu with the smiley face button. So folks could go ahead and test that out. Tell us how you're feeling right now. So Yvonne is feeling good. She's laughing. That's great. Dale is laughing. Jonathan approved. Great. Everyone's in a good mood. That's always a good sign. I'm going to pass through that as well. As I said in the beginning, we will be recording this session. This session is a shorter session than our usual webinars. It's only going to be a half an hour. We'll be waiting till the very end as a result in order to take your questions. So you can go ahead and ask those questions as we're going, and we'll collect them and make sure that they get addressed at the end. But in order to ensure that we have enough time to go through the entire presentation, we will be saving those questions for the end. The webinar is being recorded and archived for future viewings, and I'll be telling you a little bit more at the end about how you'll be able to find that archive and any other associated links and resources. So right now I'd like to go ahead and introduce today's presenter. And I'm sorry, I put that map sign up. We're going to get to that in a second. Katie Archner works for the Foundation Center. She's a reference and online librarian there, and it's in Cleveland, Ohio. And for those of you not familiar with it, it's a special library dedicated to advancing knowledge about U.S. philanthropy. She earned her MLIS in 2006 from Kent State University and continues to work for her childhood library in Massillon, Ohio, to develop digital applications for their local archive. Katie is the third 2008 ALA Emerging Leader who has done a WebJunction webinar with us, so we're very excited to have her here. So Katie, without any further introduction, I'd like to go ahead and hand it over to you. But I'm sorry, real quick, Katie, if folks, I'm sorry, Katie.
That's okay.
There you go. So Katie, it's all yours.
All right, thank you very much, Emily. And thank you everyone for attending this webinar. As Emily mentioned, I'm Katie Archner and I work at the Foundation Center in Cleveland, Ohio. And one of my great hobbies is to digitize clippings and images from my local library and brainstorm ways to turn old archives into new and interesting pieces for customers. So in the next 20 minutes, we're just going to briefly discuss the basic components of a good digital history project. And then I'm going to demonstrate a few of the free software tools that can produce a professional-looking piece. And I want to emphasize, as Emily did, that this is going to be a very brief presentation. It's going to be bite-sized, just like the topic, basically. And it's really designed just to get you thinking about possibilities for your own library.
Katie, this is Emily real quick. I've gotten a request for you to speak up just
a bit.
Okay,
I see that, yeah. Thank you. I will do that. So just to get an idea on who our audience is, if I could get a check on how many of you have actually made a digital history piece or some project for your library or your organization, that will appear in the text box below. And as we're,
You're going to have to actually click yes. Bye.
Okay, so as we're, you know, as that question is being presented, what I want to say is what we're talking about today is bite-sized digital history, which is short 5 to 7 minute presentations with people from the community talking about history. The image here on that you should see on your screen is a screenshot from a slideshow that I made with Harvey Pekar, who is a local author in Cleveland, and I'll show that later in the presentation. So what makes a good digital history project? Well, it should be equally informative and entertaining. You want to consider making these pieces something that people will be hooked on watching through to the end. They can do serious research later if they want, but here you want to try to give them something astonishing and engaging. Also, it should be about something that they didn't know before. I'm sure many of you have taken unexpected trips down through the newspaper microfilm archives and come across something in your town's history that maybe you didn't know about but wanted to know more. So it should be something kind of fresh and something that they hadn't heard before. And also it should be personal. It should be like storytelling. This gives you an opportunity to promote your customer stories. And this is also a way to make those customers feel personally invested in their library as contributors. And finally, it should be brief. You want to keep them wanting more. Like I said, they can do that serious research later in your library if they're really hooked on the subject. But I like to consider the YouTube time limit of 10 minutes per post, which I think is pretty wise, because if you think about the attention span limits and expectations of internet users, you know, it probably will be a brief project that will work better for these types of projects. Okay, so what are some examples of local history projects? Well, local businesses, businesses that have been around for a while. You could interview them on site and perhaps get materials from them, old pictures, artifacts, about when they started, about what the neighborhood was like back then. Again, another way to bring the community in on a personal level. Also, neighborhoods. Different neighborhoods have different feels to them, as you probably know. You can find people who live there and would be willing to talk about growing up there. And you want to look for stories that you can build on with materials that you have access to in your library or where you're situated. Events. These could be local or national events. Just capturing the reaction of community members to events happening. On a national level, this might mean the moon landing or the war effort or the civil rights movement. And on a local level, the subjects might be important sports victories or infamous fires, crimes, factory closings, things that are very relevant to the community. I also put authors and personalities there, having those people talk about their local inspiration. I mentioned earlier I was able to interview Harvey Pekar, who is a graphic novelist living in Cleveland Heights. And he was a regular library customer, and he comes in every Saturday still. And when we talked to him, he talked about movies that he saw at the local theater in Cleveland Heights that affected his writing. And I recognize that not everybody may have local authors, but really anyone who's accomplished something perhaps beyond the community. So let's see. How to get materials for the project? Well, most obviously would be your library. Clippings, files, microfilm, books, local newspaper companies may have archives if your library doesn't have them. Maybe a little less obvious would be customers. A lot of historical materials are probably hidden away in the attics and basements in your community. So you might consider a call for items. Consider inviting people to bring in their materials to the library and have you scan them, then you could give them a copy and the library could perhaps keep a copy. And that's one way to build a digital history, a digital archive for your library. More obviously would be museums and historical societies. If your community has a genealogy society, they may also have a home archive of local materials. And city departments. They often have archives of pictures of community features, houses, street sign. I'm thinking planning and development departments, for instance, public safety departments, even fire departments often have archives that they keep. The LA Fire Department has a nice online collection, actually. They have digital photographs of firefighter uniforms kind of through the generations, which is really interesting to look at online. Okay, so for the next part of this presentation, I want to talk about some of the free software that will take your images and audio and combine it into an actual digital piece. And PhotoStory, this is Microsoft PhotoStory 3, is a free slideshow software application that can produce image and audio files kind of in the style of a Ken Burns documentary. And so you wouldn't be putting actual video files here, like moving images, but you would add static images like photos or scanned documents. Let's see. Let me just get the share up here. So you would add these images together, and audio files could be something like music, or it could be an audio interview file in MP3 format. And you can set the movement and the timing within the slideshow for each slide. So hopefully you're seeing right now the landing page for Microsoft PhotoStory 3.
And Katie, if you could just move that window down just a little bit. There you go. And
that?
a little bit to the left as well, if you could.
Like that?
Yep, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so this is the landing page for PhotoStory. It gives you several options. You can begin a new story here or edit an existing project. And I already have some images that I put into the builder here. I put 5 images in. These are just images from my own files from libraries where I work at. And just to show you, it's very easy once you've loaded these images in to move them. I'm just clicking and dragging them and changing the order of these images. And there are 3 levels of image editing in PhotoStory. There's the cropping feature here. And then there's also the effects feature, which we'll go over really quickly. And finally, customizing motion. So there's really several ways you can play around with changing the images in PhotoStory. If I click on the edit feature here, just to show you quickly how to crop, you click the little button here and it gives you a frame that you can move around on the picture and kind of zoom in on any portion of the picture that you would like. It's going to stay kind of in a square shape no matter what you do, so there's not a lot of flexibility of zeroing in on a specific area if you didn't want a square feature. But if you wanted to do that, you would use something like a Photoshop or GIMP, some sort of photo editor. But I've zoomed in here on the clock tower, and if I save that and close it, the picture that you should see there now is kind of a zoomed in shot of that clock tower, which works nicely. The next feature for editing a photo in PhotoStory would be to use effects. And actually, let me take a color image for this. Now, the effects, there's all sorts of different ways. You're probably familiar with these. I didn't use the effects in my own slideshow because I wanted to retain that archival quality of the images that I used. But certainly, there are a lot of different ways you can make a documentary in here, and I just want to show you those different effects there. So we're putting that color picture into Sepia, and we're going to move on to the last part of photo editing, the photo editing option here. And this is actually the fun part. This is a really nice part, the customized motion. So customizing motion means this is going to be what actually sets it into motion and makes it look more like a documentary. And it does have a default already for all the pictures, but you can customize it by clicking the little button here. And then we're going to have the start position. I'll make it be the whole picture. And then I want the end position to really zoom in close on this sign. And if you notice down here, we have number of seconds to display the picture, and it is set at 11, which is going to be a nice slow pace. If I wanted that to be faster, just so I can preview it, I can change that to 5 or whatever I want. And then if we preview, a little window should pop up. And we should just be able to kind of see that motion and make sure that, you know, it's doing what we want it to do, basically. Okay, so that's the preview. I think I will set that a little longer, and I'll put it at 10, and then I'm just going to save it and close. And the other part of customized motion, which is really nice, is if I go back in here, is setting the transition. And transition basically is allowing for one picture to fade into the other in a number of ways. And if you see here below, there are really a lot of choices here that you have. Let me go back here and pick another one. There's a lot of choices down here below, and if I show some of these, you've probably seen these before. If you can see in this middle picture here, it's showing how that transition is going to play out. Some of them are pretty creative and intricate. I didn't use any of the more complex transitions here. The one that I really favored is called Fade to and from Black, and the reason I like it is because it provides kind of a nice natural transition, a natural pause in between the images. So that's the one that I chose, and I'm going to save that. So having edited these pictures a little bit and kind of played around with them, obviously there's a lot more you can do. The next step would be to add the audio, to actually marry the audio with the images and see how those two sync up. And it says by default select music, but it actually, like I said, could be an interview file or someone just speaking. And I'm going to select it. I have a piece that I already chose, and you see it shows up there in the tray. And now I'm going to just play this, and I want to let you know that when I'm doing the audio, it's coming from my computer, so you'll want to turn your audio up if the sound is a little low. And I'm just going to go ahead and preview what we've done so far. Okay, so you probably noticed that the music faded out there at the end. It wasn't actually finished with the piece, and the reason that that is because the pictures ran out. And to get the whole piece to play through and be kind of like a finite piece, you would actually have to go to the audio file and find out exactly how long it is, down to the second, and then find pictures to match that length. And this would be actually probably the main task in your editing process. So how do you find out the length of audio files or cut them down to the right size? Well, this is where we would actually leave PhotoStory and use an audio editor to work with the audio file for our slideshow. So I'm just pulling up my own folder here to show you that I'm going to go to Audacity, and this is what the icon looks like for Audacity. And I have it open here in my tray. Audacity is free as well, and basically it converts audio into MP3 files. So if you had old tapes and you converted them into audio files, you could edit them here. And I have a random audio file that I'll just play very quickly.
You're getting old and now you're nearly a man. I should start thinking about your future a little bit, you know.
Okay, so in order to see, you see these blue spikes here, in order to actually see how those correspond with the audio that you just heard, we would actually need to zoom in. And when I click the little zoom in feature here, they're going to spread out so we get a better idea of how those actually correspond. And you'll see that the time intervals are changing, and now I have it actually down to the second. So if I wanted to commence editing this piece, if, for instance, I wanted to edit out this part, just this part right here, I'm just clicking and dragging over it, and I'm going to play it to make sure it's the piece that I want. It's a very short piece, someone taking a breath. And if that's the piece that I wanted to get out of there, if it didn't fit with my file, I would use the scissors here, the cut, and it's gone. And then once I would play it again, you know, I want to make sure that those audios, the beginning and the end of that snippet actually blends in with the rest of the piece. But that's how you would actually edit down an audio piece, which could then, if you're done, you could export it as an MP3, and that's the format that is acceptable for PhotoStory. So if you get nothing else from today, I want you to know that you don't actually have to sit down with a big manual to work with these applications. You can actually start playing with them right away to create pretty sophisticated pieces. I didn't really read any manuals to work with either of these because they're very simple and kind of uncomplicated. And the results of my playing around with this stuff are now posted to YouTube in 6 parts. This is my 6-part video on Harvey Pekar talking about Coventry, which is a neighborhood in Cleveland, Ohio, and he used to live there in the 70s, and he wrote some of his comics and graphic novels about the area. And I used PhotoStory and Audacity to produce it, and I'd just like to play a minute of the piece for you now, and I hope that the audio is high enough that you'll be able to hear a little bit of what he says.
I found an apartment there for, it was like a big 6-room apartment, clean. The rent was $115 a month. So, you know, and I needed more room, too, because I had this huge collection of records and books that was just all over the place. Coventry section, before they... It was like predicted because it was starting to get run down and it was going to be the first suburban slum in the Queens area. And people were just saying, they had a couple.
Okay. So I just wanted to play a short piece, a short bit from that. Obviously, one of the coolest things about posting on the World Wide Web is that you get people to watch it from all over. And it's been really fun and kind of exhilarating to get comments from people from all over the place, good and bad, who just took time to actually watch the video. And also, people can link to this from YouTube. They can link to your piece onto their blog or their own website. So basically, what we were talking about was free software, which is really important when you're doing pieces like this, because you want to keep the cost down to zero for the production tools. And using PhotoStory, Audacity, and if you wanted to go the whole way using a graphics editor, like GIMP, which is similar to Photoshop, you could actually do the whole thing for free using software that is freeware or open source. And the reason that I really stress that is something that you probably know, is that libraries don't have huge budgets for fancy software, but also the time involved in doing a project like this can also be costly. And the time spent in editing is going to represent the major bulk of your time, more so than actually sitting down with someone and interviewing them or even looking for the materials. So time can be expensive, so that's why having the software part be free is something to consider. And also free server space for displaying it. YouTube, the code for YouTube can be embedded on your library website or on your blog. You can also use Omnisio for mashups. And for those of you that may not know what a mashup is, that's when you take several video files together and put them, and they exist as one piece. And so my videos on YouTube are in 6 parts, but in Omnisio, they exist as one full piece. And finally, to conclude with the most important question, what are the benefits of local history stories? Well, most obviously, users will feel more connected to the library if they feel they're part of content creation. I really believe that. I think people really do want to hear stories about their community, about themselves, about places that they can point to and say, I've been there. Also, I think what's very important is content creation. We hear this a lot, how libraries should be content creators rather than keepers of the archives. And so I think it's a good opportunity to put your collection to work for you and repackage it. And finally, letting the world know about it. It does benefit the wider world to hear about your local history, and it also benefits you to share that with everybody. So that concludes my presentation today. I'd like to thank all of you for attending. And
so Katie, we're going to give a couple minutes for questions, and then I have some additional resources I want to share with folks at the end. Glenn has a question. I'd like to experiment with this process using my own family history materials first, then try it with local history. That's a really great idea. And if folks, I know I had some ideas as I was listening to Katie about things that I could do with this process. If folks have ideas already, maybe you could share that in the chat box. People can always learn from each other.
Yeah, and I would say that that's how I started actually playing around with Photo Story is I made a little fake slideshow for my friend using pictures that we had, you know, developed from one of our trips that we'd taken, and I just put it together and added some music to it and sent it, and that's kind of how I learned more about how it worked. So that's a good idea for starting.
And something else I really liked about the Harvey Pekar piece that you did, Katie, is that you used a local celebrity to narrate some local history. So that's, I think that's just a really great idea as well.
Right.
So Jonica has a question. Can you tell me a little bit about possible copyright issues when adding music to a presentation that is published on the web?
Well, I'm not a copyright expert. The music that I just used there, obviously, for a library presentation. So if you were planning on selling a piece, I don't think you would want to use music unless you'd asked permission. The presentation that I made, I got permission to use the audio to interview Harvey. Obviously, he gave me permission to use it, and that's when I published it on the web. But as far as the real copyright issues of that, you'd have to actually probably ask a legal expert. And who really? Copyright can be really confusing.
Michelle has a question. And my comment was, is, you know, you can always use music from a local musician.
Community. Or there's the 1972 rule, or, you know, classical music from, I think it's 70, not 72, I'm sorry, but it's like a 70-year threshold, and music that's published earlier than that is what's called public domain. Yeah. But, again, you'd have to look that up to make sure before you do it.
So Michelle's question is, tell me the advantages of using Photo Story over a PowerPoint.
Well, Photo Story allows you to make your images dynamic in a way that PowerPoint, as far as I know, doesn't do. It's really kind of a slideshow application. So it allows you to input files, static images, and it allows the application allows it to move around the page, move around the image, and as I showed you, apply those transitions, the different fade outs. It kind of allows you to be a little bit of a filmmaker in a way. And then also marrying that with the audio together, putting it all into an MP3 file that you can then use in a number of ways. So as far as I know, PowerPoint doesn't allow for that kind of flexibility.
So we have just a couple minutes. I'm pushing out right now a survey. If folks, it should open up in a separate browser window for you. It shouldn't take very long, but we do take your comments seriously. Let us know what you thought about this webinar. I also want to say thank you to our presenter, Katie, and as well as the folks that showed up. You know, these webinars would be nothing if people didn't come. So thank you very much. And we do have a couple more minutes for questions. You can just go ahead and keep typing those questions into the chat, and Katie will be able to address them. Also, you know, I want to just point to there's some resources here on WebJunction to help you stay involved with ideas like this. We are going to be adding some courses very soon, hopefully by the end of the week, on video editing. So if you want to learn sort of the next level up about how to edit video for the web, there will be courses in the WebJunction catalog, hopefully by the end of this week. We also have courses on web design and development that you might be interested in. Addie says, this is definitely a gateway to some wonderful history projects. Yes, I think this is a really great. We also have webinars throughout this month, the month of December, that I hope folks will attend, including three virtual town halls to talk about tough economic times. So I hope folks will learn more about those. You can find information about that at that link I said, webjunction.org/events/webinars. So let's spend the last couple minutes just answering more questions.
So Dale had an interesting question. I'm wondering if anybody else in the room might have a response about translating text.
Yeah.
George of Oral History Tape would like to put them through.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of software like that, but I don't have any names, but I definitely heard that talked about because a lot of people have those oral history tapes. Mm-hmm. And you know, the best thing to do would be to get them into text somehow, to even as a way to kind of frame your project and decide, you know, what uses it could be
mm-hmm.
put to.
I know Dragon, naturally speaking. I wonder, though, if there's accuracy issues with some of those softwares.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good question.
I'd imagine they would be expensive, but I don't know.
Well, it's 8:30 according to my clock, so thank you, everybody, for coming. I'm going to put, again, a link to where you'll be able to find the archive of this session. I will be sending out an email as well. Most of you probably got an email yesterday from me, and I'll be sending a follow-up email as well that will have the archive to the session. So if folks weren't able to attend. Looks like someone's got their speakers on. If folks aren't able to attend, then you can share that with them. I'm going to go ahead and stop the archive.